listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, so good. We've got our gardening guru, Professor Wally Richards. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, everybody, all you gardeners out there.
Oh, are we? What? And is it the best weather for it now?
Yeah, the weather's improving, but it was bloody chilly just last day or so. Cold wind, frost, snow down your way.
In central Otago, we've been getting frosts, and my potatoes got a nip, but they came right. My potatoes are coming right. They're growing. So I'm very excited. I'm timing it to get some potatoes for Christmas. And a couple of things, Wally. We've reached outside the Wally Richards circle. No one can compare or compete. But we spoke to the Dirt Doctor. Have you heard of the Dirt Doctor?
No, I haven't. No.
Des O'Gorman. And his specialist field and study on his plot is soil and getting it back to health. And he's done it on his plot and made notes and got it all tested by the laboratories. He's got a $3,000 microscope that lets him see the microbes. He's a big believer in compost tea, where you get your compost and a bit of litter, put it in a pillowcase, sit it in water, warm the water up, and then aerate it, and you get the microbes, and then put that in your garden to get the microbes going good. The only trouble was we had an appalling phone connection. But get this. When in Parliament, royalty visit, they get his tomatoes and his potatoes.
Sorry, say that again.
When royalty visits New Zealand,
yeah,
they send a courier to his place to get their the tomatoes and potatoes.
Oh, really? That's nice.
That's how good he is.
Yeah.
Because he said, like you, you get the soil right,
mm-hmm.
Everything flows. Now, the other bit of exciting news to report is that we had Hugh Rose on from, what is it, the Lotus Garden? What's it called up north?
The Land of the Lotus. Land of Lotus, yes. Going bananas.
Going bananas, and on its way to me as we speak is whatever I need to grow a banana and whatever I need to grow a pineapple.
Right. Okay. Now, interestingly, in their website, they state that they have sent banana plants out all over New Zealand, even down to Invercargill.
Isn't that amazing?
They state that further south, you may need a glasshouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, banana plants are pretty hardy, and they can also be grown they're talking about a 10-litre container, which is not very big, really, 10 litres.
It's a bucket, right?
Yeah. And let's face it, they are quite tall. Well, most varieties are anyway. They're taller than us. I've grown them in a 20-litre to 50-litre container successfully. In fact, even more successfully, what my favourite is, the 200-litre plastic drums, which are all over the place. And if you go on Trade Me, you can see people selling them in different areas.
Well, they give them away down in Queenstown.
Yeah, because they're pretty hard to recycle. And cut in half, they make beautiful 100-litre containers for growing anything in, right? I've always used them for citrus trees, fruit trees, that sort of thing. The key to it too is you don't put any holes in the bottom, right?
Yeah.
If you do, you've got two problems. If it's sitting on concrete, there tends to be a resistance to the water getting out because it kind of creates an airlock, right? Yep. So like with most containers outside that have underneath holes for drainage, you need to lift the container up a little bit so there's an airflow, and then yes. you don't have that problem. If you don't, your container becomes waterlogged, and when it becomes waterlogged, the plants suffer and the roots rot and they die. It's as simple as that, really. The 100-litre drums, that's 200 cut in half, you put the holes on the side, right?
Mm.
About 50 mil up from the bottom.
2 inches.
Yep, 2 inches. Good on you, you know your stuff. I only learned that 2 inches is 50 mils recently. That mainly because 2x4, you know.
I know.
That's the only way I know, 2x4.
Look, I'm a young man and I still work in inches. Someone asks me, what do you guess at? I've got to always say, oh, it's a couple of feet or 6 inches. I can't think of it in metric.
No.
Because I learned inches and feet as a boy and it stuck with me.
Yeah, yeah. They changed the world. Anyway,
so a couple of inches up, you drill a hole. How big would you make the hole?
About 50 millimetre. So you get one of those drill saw things where a drill goes in and then the saw goes.
Yeah, because 50 around. Millimetre, what, 2 inches?
Yeah.
That's a big hole.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of dirt in there too. You'd want good drainage.
But man, I would never have thought of that.
If you put a little, say 5 millimetre.
I would have put a quarter inch hole in.
5 millimetre, like, that could block up no trouble at all, right? So a good hole, but underneath that, of course, you've got a good area, 50 millimetres or so, where water will sit and rise up during dry times. So you've got a reservoir.
Yeah.
And that's good for summertime. And even in the wintertime, if that's full of water, it's not going to worry the root system because most of the roots are above that.
Yeah. So you put in, how many holes would you put in at 2 inches?
I put 4 at the cardinal points.
Okay.
Do you know what the cardinal points mean?
Yeah, the points of the compass.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realise the cardinal points are north, south, east, west.
What are the ordinal points?
Yeah, so...
No, what are the ordinal points?
What is the ordinary? Sorry?
Ordinal. There's cardinal and ordinal.
Oh, I don't know. North, south, east, west.
Nor do I. I just thought you might know. There's an ordinal, there's cardinal and ordinal. I don't know what the difference is. Hey, so you do that. What do you clean the drum with?
What do I clean it on?
Because when I got a drum, it was a lot of oil over it, a film of oil.
It depends what was in the drum, right?
Yeah.
Of course, if you've got a steam washer or you've got a high-pressure hose or something, you can usually rinse out.
Detergent.
Before you put any holes in it, of course.
Yeah, detergent. Can you use detergent?
Yeah, of course. You could some warm water and some dishwashing liquid will help remove oil because oil gets emulsified with the dishwashing liquid. So you can give it a bit of a wash out. If, of course, it was something like canola oil or in my case, neem oil in there, don't worry about it because it's not going to hurt anything.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't have to take a lot of intention.
Do you need to paint them?
No, because that plastic, from my own experience, has lasted like 12, 15, 20 years before it starts to become a bit brittle.
So you're talking about the plastic drums. I'm talking about the metal drums.
Oh, no. They're rust.
Yeah,
no good at all.
Plastic drum.
Oh, the plastic drums.
They're harder to obtain, I think, down here, but I'll have a look. So you cut them in half.
Yeah, cut them in half to get 2 100 litres. One end, of course, you've got the two plug stoppers, you leave them in. Now, if you were to put the holes in the side, and as I have done in the past, where I wanted to grow a citrus tree, but the drainage is really poor and tendency to flood in wet times, yep. I have used a 100-litre drum, but I've partly buried it in the soil with the side holes buried underneath the soil. Now, the beauty of this is you plant your citrus tree in it and it grows away quite happily. The roots will actually go out through those holes, and even if the drum is sitting in the lake of water in the wintertime, the citrus tree is not affected because most of the root system is above the water level. And so it's happy as Larry. The only problem is if you do that, you can't move it easily, right, because you'd have to cut the roots.
What's the advantage of putting it in a drum?
Movability, like if you move house, you can take your tree with you.
Mm-hmm.
If with the case of bananas, as long as you've got the means to be able to move the drum, which means having a little trolley thing or something, or maybe put wheels under it, as somebody suggested. It means in the summertime you can have it right outside, getting lots of sun. Wintertime comes, frost, okay, you move your banana plant to a sheltered situation.
Mm.
And so it's protected against frost. And then, of course, you use vapor guard on it or frost protection, etc. Now, my banana plant that I had, which I brought here, and I planted in the garden, I made a fatal mistake going into winter when I went around and sprayed everything with my vapor guard for frost protection, all the tender plants, passion fruit vine, etc., avocados, did the whole lot, forgot the bloody banana plant.
Why?
First, I don't know. I just walked past and forgot all about it, you know. moment of lapse of reason.
We have those moments, we men.
Yeah.
And our wives often say, why did you not do that? And actually, it's inexplicable, right?
Yeah. Not good. No. Besides, but anyway, my hair's gone white, so I can call it a blonde moment.
A blonde moment. So your banana plant is had. You had a banana plant.
Yeah, I thought it was history. It had beautiful big leaves on it. It had a little pup on the side coming away nicely. And then one decent frost, it's black. Black is the ace of spades, my God. I thought, I lost my banana, right? But just recently, up from the top, shoots a new leaf. And then I checked around the base, and there's about four or five pups starting to form. And I'm going, wow. Giving it a knock like that, it really, you know, upset it. So it's going to produce a whole lot and make a big clump.
Wow.
That's
so you haven't actually had any bananas off your banana tree yet?
I did when I had it in Palmerston North.
Okay.
Because
they say you will not believe the taste of the bananas compared to the ones you buy in the shop.
Yeah, yeah. They were ladyfinger type bananas, you know, just a small. This is a plant that somebody gave me. Now, what I've done, of course, is with the Land of Lotus, is I got a whole list of all their different types of banana plants. And my partner, being Philippine, I said to her, which ones of these do you recognize? Because we've got a Philippine shop, you know, if I get Philippine bananas, they're in high demand. We have them frozen, imported all the way from the Philippines, different types of bananas. So she picked out three, and those are the three that I have just planted up into my 100-litre plastic drums.
Now, nice.
What I did was I got my favourite value compost from good old Bunnings, and I put that in the bottom of the drum. And then I went to the chook house and I got the spade and I mucked out the chook house, which was overdue for a mucking out. Do you muck out your chook house?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, beautiful stuff comes out of there, yes. My God. Yep. And put down fresh.
I should say my daughter does because they're her hens.
Ah, right. Okay. So I filled up the wheelbarrow and then I took a good amount and threw that into the drum because bananas are heavy feeders. And then I threw in some ocean solids, some biofoss, and unlocking your soil to give those extra vitamins and minerals and stuff. And then I more compost on the top and I planted my stem that came in, which was about a foot long with roots starting to form at the base, right? So I buried that into the drum. And sure enough, you're starting to see up from the center the first of the leaves. And banana plants are bloody beautiful with their foliage, you know, beautiful, exotic foliage. The only problem is, of course, the wind shreds them.
Okay.
Right? But so if they're in a sheltered pot, that's good. I remember years ago, one of the nurseries, I think it might be Zealandia or one of them, they actually sold as a house plant young banana plants, in which they would grow quite happily inside because they've got a big leaf, so they don't need an excessive amount of light. They need good light. Whether they fruit inside or not would be debatable, but if you had a conservatory or glasshouse, no problems at all. They will reach fruiting stage. And they flower, of course, and then the flowers set to form the bananas. And I've heard, and I presume it's correct, that once you've got your bunch of bananas there, sitting there green, you can speed up the ripening by putting a big plastic, clear plastic bag over them and tie that on. And that just increases the heat or temperature or what, and ripen. But you can ripen off the plant, of course, as we see bananas coming into New Zealand are all green.
I know, and you can get your bananas and pineapples from Land of the Lotus, and we have interviewed, it'll be up on replay, Hugh Rose, whose business it is, along with his wife Pauline, who I know from another life. And when I go on their Facebook page, Wally, this is what I read. Newsflash! Exclamation mark. Wally Richards' garden products are now available in Northland at Land of the Lotus. If you've heard Wally on Rodney High's Reality Check radio show or seen his many articles, you'll know how good these are. Biggest challenge is not to use them all ourselves. But get this.
Yeah.
And there's a big thing of that. But get this. At the bottom, a lovely lady called Carol Deacon has written this as a comment. I have been using Wally's products for around 20 years. I would definitely recommend checking them out. A lifetime of knowledge and experience have gone into his products. Ain't that the truth?
Lovely, yeah. Oh, just a moment. My earphones are expanding on my head.
That wasn't you, was it?
Oh, of course not.
Writing that. Now, I'm getting a pineapple and a banana, and I'm very looking forward to growing them. And I'll keep my eye out and get a plastic drum. That's very exciting.
The pineapple, now, you may remember from times gone by when we got pineapples in the fruit shop or whatever, and the pineapples had their leaves on the top, right?
Yep, I do.
Right, okay. Now, I don't think they do anymore. I think they remove them or something, don't they? I can't remember seeing them on recent times. But back then, the leaves are there. So what you did, you cut just below.
Oh, you grew them.
Yeah, and you sat it into a pot, right, yeah. with a bit of flesh, and they would root up. And then they'd form into a mature plant, and at some point in time they'd flower and fruit, and that was your pineapple again.
Isn't nature amazing.
Mm.
Now, we're going to be talking more about this because I'm getting one and I want it to work because I don't want to let down Land of the Lotus. We're going on, Wally. You're concerned that there are a number of gardeners where their tomatoes, beans, potatoes are growing funny this season. What's going on?
Yes. In an article I wrote the other week, the problem is herbicide. Now, herbicide can get and affect the plants, and we're talking about parts per million. We're not talking about enough weed killer to kill a plant. Right. The biggest problem that I see is with green waste. Green waste is people's clippings, lawn clippings, etc., etc. They take down because it's free. You give them to them. They compost them, and then they sell it to you as compost. Right. Unfortunately, even weed killers in lawns such as Turfix, etc., have a 6 month residue, right?
Wow.
Others can be 12 months, 18 months residue, which means every time you cut your lawn, those clippings contain herbicide. And if you take them to the recycler, he doesn't know. So he recycles. And I'm led to believe that you have to keep turning the compost for 18 months to get rid of the herbicide, right? Now, that's totally uneconomical.
Of course.
Yeah, so it doesn't happen. And I've even seen brands, well-known brands of, like, tomato compost being sold, and the people ring me up after I've used it and say, my tomatoes are going all funny at the tops. It's all feathery leaves. Oh, really? And then when I talked to them and sorted it out, it's come from a brand compost, which should never, ever happen. But green waste is cheap. It's free, basically. And nobody knows what's in that. The other problem that arises, of course, is spray drift. Now, the key to spraying herbicides is you don't do it on a still day, just like you don't do it on a windy day, because both of them spread the herbicide.
Of course.
Something I learned when I went for my license, you know, which the government made people like me go for a license so that we knew all about everything. And something I hadn't realized, but on a still day, when you're spraying, the little wee droplets go up in the air on the conventional currents, right? And they float along there, down the street and so forth, and somewhere or other they dump. And where they dump, nobody knows. But tomatoes, roses, beans are three that will be adversely affected. Not kill them, but cause funny, unusual growth, like they're distorted, etc., right? So the key really is if you're getting a compost from a place where you're not too sure of and they've said, oh, no, no, this is organic. My God, organic means it's just bloody nature stuff. It's not necessarily certified organic. You take it home and you get a little punnet and you put the compost in the punnet. You stick two or three bean seeds in it and keep it moist, and if the bean seeds germinate and come up clean with good foliage, the compost is good. It's an easy test to do, right? You can, just to be sure that there's nothing wrong with the bean seeds, is also just get some other compost or soil or something and have a control next to it where the beans germinate and just some topsoil. All right. So that will prove it's okay to put around. The thing is, of course, if you're putting around other plants like your silver beet, cabbages, etc., you will never know that there's any herbicide in it because they will not be noticeably affected. It's only the tomato, beans, and roses that are mostly affected. Animal manures coming in off a farm under sheep manure from underneath the what's name. I remember one occasion in Palmerston North where the JCs went out and they mucked out all these sheep places where they shear the sheep, shearing shed, and filled up the bags with sheep manure and then took it and sold it for a dollar each or something to the locals. My God. It was full of herbicide. Oh, people put it around their roses and, oh, my God, what a mess.
How does herbicide get into sheep poo?
Because what happens is the farmer sprays his paddock off with Roundup, right, and they call it Roundup Ready or whatever, right, before he sows his what's name. The grass dries out or dies. It's full of sugars, and cattle, sheep, horses love that because it's so rich in sugar, right? And so the farmer lets them in to have a munch up, get rid of the stubble and the grass. It's gone brown, and then they go off to the shearing shed and get shorn and have a poo. Simple.
Goodness me.
There was a story a lady told me one time, and she was laughing. Her husband and our dairy farmers, right, he decided this season coming up, he would not artificially inseminate the cows, he would get a couple of good bulls and do it the old-fashioned way, right? So off he goes to the auction, he gets a couple of bulls, checks out the semen count and so forth. Oh, no, they're good stuff. So probably $500,000 a pop, whatever, per bull. He takes them home. Now, the home paddock he'd sprayed off with Roundup and the grass was dying. And so he thought, oh, I'll just put the bulls in there. They can chew it off, and which they duly did. Then two or three weeks later, it's time to put them over the cows. So, oh, get another semen test done just to be sure. What? No semen? It completely destroyed the bull semen, the Roundup.
Goodness me.
Yeah. They would have come right later on, of course, you know, but he missed out for the season. He had to get the cows artificially inseminated, and she was laughing.
Should I be worried that neighbours here have commercial vineyards?
With using sprays, yes, because they can drift if they're not doing it on a – the ideal time to do it is when it's a light breeze, because then the spray particles are directed at the target plant and they go where you want them to go. Nothing goes elsewhere, right? One of the tricks you can do, though, for the home gardener is on your spray wand, you've got your wand in your backpack or your pump up, what's the name, right? You get yourself a 2-litre ice cream container, and in the middle of that you make a little hole and you unscrew the nozzle off your sprayer so it just fits through that hole, and then screw the nozzle back on, and then it's all enclosed, right? You've got your Roundup, whatever you're using, right, in your sprayer. You can sit that over the offending weed that you're going to spray and hit the trigger. No droplets go anywhere. They're just straight there where it is. And that is so simple to do. The other problem, too, is if you have a sprayer in which you use a weed killer in it, whether it be Roundup or whatever, the plastic of the sprayer absorbs the chemical. To clean that out properly, you've got to go and get a proper cleaner, which commercial people use, right? But soap and water won't do it. Next time you go to use that sprayer and you're going to spray your pyrethrum or neem oil over your roses for the aphids, this herbicide comes out and affects the rodents. So any sprayer that you use for weed killing, you write in big letters, weed killer only.
Yeah.
Because I've had so many people in the past who the wife or the husband or somebody, one of the family, grabs it, not knowing what it's been used for, puts something in, and then goes and kills the garden.
And those little sprays don't cost much.
Yeah. Oh, little trigger sprays are ideal to use. But, like, to go and do your weed killing, if you're using, like we talked about once before, the ammonium sulfamate as a better to use, safer to use, less harm to everything aspect. Once again, you should have a separate sprayer just for that particular purpose.
Okay, Wally. Now, to follow up, we've got a couple of listeners' questions.
Okay.
That came in. Help with the white butterfly.
Help with the white butterfly. There are the most effective and cost effective is to use the thing we call crop cover, which they call bug mesh in the garden centres, right? It's a bit like curtain netting, but it's more tougher. It's fine plastic. When you go to plant your seedlings, the first thing to do is you check the seedlings for eggs. More often than not, particularly as we get into the season, the little seedlings you buy from somewhere will have little yellow eggs on them. And if you don't check them and rub them off, that caterpillar's waiting to happen, right?
Oh, goodness me.
So you're
bringing your own destruction in.
90% of the gardening problems that we have been brought in inadvertently by ourselves, either mud on our boots or plant material, even from garden centres, nurseries and so forth. Quite often you'll bring the problem in on the plants and then it spreads. The key to it, like I often say, like cotton moth, for instance. Now, if you move way out in the country, way out in the sticks, well away from most civilization, nearest neighbor 5 miles away or something, right, and you took an apple tree that was clean and planted it, you never have cotton moth because they never find it. Mm. But you plant it next door to the neighbor who's got cotton moth in their apple tree, you're going to have cotton moth in your apple tree. Right. Same problem.
Here's another one. What's the best tomato and cucumber to plant?
What is the best tomato and cucumber? Really, this comes down to your taste. What is your preferred taste?
I know which ones to avoid. My wife said, I love those cherry tomatoes.
Right, yes, a bloody nuisance.
Terrible things.
Oh, I hate them.
They're useless for anything that I like, which is like a slice of tomato on a piece of toast.
Right, yep.
Because you have to cut up 20 of the little things.
The key to that is get 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different tomato plants, which in some garden centers they sell them individually. You've got your heirlooms, etc. And plant them, and when the fruit ripens, then you can decide, that's the best one. That's the one I like, or those two are good. Now, once you know and you get the names of them, you know what to grow next season. I probably prefer things like Moneymaker, Gros Lisa, old varieties. Russian Red is a favourite one of mine. Medium-sized tomatoes, good flavour. Cucumbers. Now, it depends whether you want a big cucumber, like a telegraph cucumber, or whether you want little finger ones.
Yeah.
And the finger ones you can get through Egmont Seeds, 5 in a packet. They're prolific fruiters, fruit all season through, and they produce, generally speaking, as long as you pick them before they get too big, one's a bit bigger than your finger, like you see in the supermarket. I think they have a name for them in the supermarket. I am quite impressed growing telegraph cucumbers in my glasshouse last season. They fruited earlier than the tomatoes, and mainly because they've got big leaves. Mm. And of course, they could catch more sunlight. And these days, a bit of lacking of sunlight because of pollution in the atmosphere makes all the world a difference.
Very good, Wally. I said earlier, for some reason, the dirt doctor is Jim O'Gorman. Okay. And for some reason, I always want to call him Des O'Gorman. I don't know why. His name is Jim O'Gorman. He says the key, and I think you'll agree with this, Wally, the key to a lovely tomato and potato is a healthy soil.
It's soil.
It's a soil. It's where it gets all its goodness from, right? Can I tell you my big job that I've been doing and I'm moving on now? I grew 400 mountain beach little seedlings. And I guess I've got to half a metre high to a metre. I grew them in pots. I got them and repotted them all. And I grew them in my, what I call my nursery. I've taken 175 of them and I've planted them out. And the remaining couple of hundred, I have repotted in big pots. I got MBL and molasses mixed together. I don't know if that's allowed, but I did. I sprayed those trees. Did they take off? Oh, my goodness, they've taken off. I mean, you almost notice it from, because we've got beautiful sun. Although we've had some cold days, we've mostly had beautiful sun and long days. And I've kept the water up to them. You almost notice it going back the next day that they've grown. And they've all greened up. So I'm going to spray them every couple of weeks, Wally, with MBL and molasses.
Yep, yep. No, good idea. You could do it weekly if you want to on preferred plants.
Well, it's extraordinary. In fact, neighbours are remarking, they said, God, those trees took off. I don't tell them my secret. I should do really to help you out, because if I told them what was happening, they'd be into it. MBL.
There's one slight danger here, and that is stray yeast or microbes in the magic botanic liquid, and you add in the molasses, which is sugars, and so forth.
It takes off.
And you have it in a sealed trigger sprayer or whatever, and then a couple of days later you see the trigger sprayer has got much bigger. It's swelling. It's ballooning because the microbes are growing and populating. So if you're putting magic botanic liquid with molasses, the ideal thing is to unscrew the top and let it breathe.
Okay.
You'll never have a problem.
It's not a problem for the plant.
No problems at all. In fact, it's good because the more microbes you get on the plant, it's like plants get diseases, right? And some of them are pathogen diseases. So if you get a whole lot of people into the pus, then the bad people can't get on board because there's no room.
Yes.
Same principle, right? So if you've got colonized your foliage of your plant with beneficial microbes, using microcin or whatever to aid and abet them, or the molasses, then disease comes along and it can't get on.
Okay.
End of story.
Can I tell you my experiment that I'm going to engage in later this week or next week? Yeah, next week it will be. It's going to be an experiment courtesy of, I've got to get his name right, Jim O'Gorman. Not Dez, Jim. I'm going to, I spied out where my son goes, he goes sailing once a week, that there is this beautiful stand of mountain beech trees. And I crawled in underneath, and there's this like literally a foot or more deep of organic material, litter.
Wow.
Right down to dirt.
Yay.
I'm going to dig up a couple of buckets of that next Sunday, bring it home. I'm going to purchase, I'm just trying to find out where, because there's nowhere in around here that I can get it. I'm going to purchase. Tell me where any of this goes wrong. I'm going to purchase a aquarium aerator and an aquarium heater. I'm going to put my beach frost litter in one of my wife's pillowcases, but I think I'll check with her if she's got any old ones first. I'm going to suspend that in a bucket of water, which is going to be, when I put it in the high teens temperature wise. I'm going to aerate said water.
And warm it, yes.
And warm it over 24 hours.
Yep.
I thought I would add some molasses to it.
Yep.
I've got your mycosin. How do I say that?
Mycosin, yep.
Mycosin. Should I add that rather than molasses or both?
Mycosin has got other things besides molasses, but it has also got molasses. But you could add them both. I mean, okay. So the more sugars you've got, the more fuel they've got to populate.
Yeah. Then what I'm going to do, courtesy of Jim, is I'm going to fill up my 5-litre little sprayer that I've been spraying the NBL on in molasses. He suggested diluting it 1-4, I think.
Okay.
I don't know why I would. I think I'll just take it raw, because the richer it is, the better, I would have thought. And then after 24 hours, I take that material and I'm going to spray it on the leaves of my beech trees and on the dirt beneath them. How does that sound as a plan?
Okay. One thing, and you probably have no problems whatsoever, but before you spray all the beech trees, was it? You spray a couple and leave it for a week or two. Whenever you're going to do something and you're not sure of the end result as to the effect of it on the plants you're going to spray, you do a test spray. And we advise commercial growers, et cetera, and even home gardeners. If you're not sure, just spray a little bit and see what happens. If nothing happens and everything's good as gold, spray the whole lot.
Got it.
Right.
That's almost too sensible for me, but I'll do that, Wally, because I'd be embarrassed to come on the show and say my 175 trees that I've spent 3 weeks caring for and planting out and staking up and spraying with your wonderful MBL, I wiped out and one fell through. I couldn't stand that.
Right. Yep.
But I need to get those bugs going in the soil and around that plant, right?
Right, yeah. Now, the other key to it, and you're okay because you don't have chlorinated water.
No.
But in town, you couldn't do that using tap water because the tap water would kill whatever you're trying to create.
Isn't that amazing?
Because of chlorine. Chlorine is designed to kill microbes. The worst thing you can put into your garden is chlorine.
Probably the worst thing you can put in your mouth too, because presumably the chlorine kills all the bugs in your gut.
Yeah. It is. I know. They're trying to kill us.
They
but
are
not many people know that.
No. Wally, it's always a pleasure talking. I look forward to our next date.
Right. Good.
That Thank was you. Professor Wally Richards, Gardening Guru, a wealth of information, a wealth of great products. You can find him. Just Google Wally Richards because I forget his number off the top of my head. Google Wally Richards Garden Enterprises and you'll see all the products that you need. But better yet, just give him a ring. What's the number, Wally?
0800-466-464.
0800-466-464. You got a problem? You ring Wally and yep. he'll sort you out. Thank you, Wally. You have a great rest of your week. Talk soon.
Lovely. Thank you. Bye for now.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.